And my next speaker for this afternoon is a person who's been on the barricades for quite some time with us. She's a person who has blazed the trails along with several other blind people in areas where blind people had not gone before. I'm not going to put on Lieutenant Uhura, but having said that, another one of the shoulders that was referred to earlier by Mindy. I give you, for whatever she cares to say, a longtime Federationist, leader on the national level, not only in the National Federation of the Blind, but in her field and in her profession and in academia, Dr. Adrienne Ash.
People hear me?
Here, I'll help you. No, huh? They won't be able to. Hold on, let me just, I'll fix it for
them. Oh, all right. Thank you. It's been several years since I've been at this convention. I've managed not to miss any national conventions for many, many years, but often this convention conflicts with a professional meeting that I go to every year. But we can blame the national fiscal crisis for the fact that my university couldn't sponsor my going to the American Society for Bioethics and Humanities. So now I get to sponsor myself and come here. And I'm glad, really glad to be here. 40 years ago was my first New York State NFB convention. Laura Herman was here. Wilbur Webb was here. Vinny was probably here, although I'm not sure I met you at the time. Linda Reutel Webb was here. There probably are some others who were here that I don't remember. But it was an important convention. I was a year out of college. It was 1970. Some of us remember Kent State, the Vietnam War, Nixon before Watergate in the White House, the Beatles.
Came for the Beatles, not for Nixon.
Dr. Jernigan had been our national president for only a year or two. Dr. Tenbrook died in 1968. Our national headquarters was not in Baltimore. It was a long time between 1970 and Baltimore. It was 8 years. Dr. Jernigan was the leader of the Organized Blind, but the Braille Monitor was edited by someone named Perry Sundquist from California. It was before Jim Gashel was our national rep. John Nagel was the national rep, a name many of you have probably never heard. Our headquarters was in Des Moines, Iowa, at the Randolph Hotel. But those facts aren't very important, really, in terms of where we were then. But where we were then, in New York State and nationally, was a very interesting time, a very passionate time, and not a time of the kind of partnership that we heard between Carl Jacobson and the NFB and Brian McDonald and CBVH. That partnership did not exist. And in fact, for many New York State conventions, one of the main events of a Saturday program was to bring someone here and try to be polite while we peppered those people with questions and basically told them things they didn't want to hear and things they didn't want to listen to and things they often didn't listen to And while we struggled to get better services and better recognition for who we were. Two of the fights of the 1970s that New York State was involved in a big way, and actually had some leadership in, had to do with NAC, the National Accreditation Council for Agencies Serving the Blind, and leading, it was before, the 1970 was before there was a Rehabilitation Act of 1973. It was before things known as the Civil Rights Laws of Title V. There were very few state laws having to do with civil rights for blind people. So that's where we were in 1970. And I want to talk about those fights in New York State a little bit, and then talk about where we were. But before I do that, this is a plea for all of us to read some of the incredible oratory of leaders of this organization. Our founder, Jacobus Ten Broeck, was really one of the most remarkable writers in the field of blindness, or civil rights, or human rights, or social justice, however you want to think about it. And although I will never be able to do his oratory justice by my own reading, I'd urge you to get hold of a book, The Man Jacobus, and read it. You can get it in Braille, you can get it on recording, you can get it. And I'm just going to quote from a little bit of writing so that you can get a flavor of what we were fighting in the 50s when he began and where we still were in the 70s. So in 1956, I had a address called With God, and the following. I'm just going to give you a little bit of the flavor of this. Let me begin by giving you a purely hypothetical and very fanciful situation. Imagine that somewhere in the world exists a civilization in which the people without hair, that is, the bald, are looked down upon and rigidly set apart from everyone else by virtue of their distinguishing physical characteristic. If you can accept this fantasy for a moment, it is clear that at least two kinds of organizations would come into being dedicated to serve the interests of these unfortunate folk. First, I suggest, there would appear a group of non-bald persons drawn together out of sympathy for the sorry condition of this rejected minority. In short, a benevolent society with a charitable purpose and a protective role. Does all this sound familiar to you? At first, all of the members of this society would be volunteers, doing the work on their free time and out of the goodness of their hearts. Later, paid employees would be added who would earn their livelihood out of the work, who would gradually assume a position of dominance. And he goes on, talking about the country of the bald, as it were. And then, of course, he talks about the second kind of organization, the National Federation of the Bald, and talks about the work of the National Federation of the Blind in the 1950s and what characterized them in the 1960s, when we were fighting for our rights to control our own lives, our rights to not be patronized by agencies, our rights to obtain civil service employment or an education. Now, just one more little bit before I take us to the 1970s and on. Because in another address, The Cross of Blindness that he delivered, he talks about instances of discrimination that blind people suffered. Now, the interesting thing about this list is that some of them, I think, wouldn't happen now, but some of them still do. And he talks about, and I remember reading this in the 1960s and thinking, this can't really be true. But of course it was. I won't read it. I'm already taking too much time of my time on on Tenbrook, but he gives lists of people denied opportunities to serve on juries. We can do that now. And New York State pioneered in that. People denied opportunities for civil service employment. That's not so true now. Denied opportunities to get safe deposit boxes or to give blood. Things that I think are not so common today. And we can thank the National Federation of the Blind for a lot of the progress that's been made in those areas. And in 1997, I know I'm skipping around here, Dr. Jernigan gave a very eloquent address about the day after civil rights, arguing that we had won a lot of our rights and that now we had to do other things. But I want to take us from the 1950s and the 1960s to say something about where we are today. In the 1970s, when I joined the National Accreditation Council for Agencies Serving the Blind and Visually Handicapped, long name for a very annoying organization, controlled standards for organizations. But as was characteristic of many agencies, they want representatives of organizations of the blind having anything. 1972, the New York City chapter, sorry, 1971, December 1971, the New York City chapter of the National Federation of the Blind of New York State, or the Metropolitan chapter, as I think we were called, picketed NAC. This was, after all, the days of street demonstrations and that. And New York often led the nation, and we were viewed as a little radical. I think that would be fair to say. Streaming Maryland, you'll remember. But actually, Dr. Jernigan, who had come to be an emissary from NFB to NAC, was actually kind of excited about this little band of NFB members who were going to picket outside all day during that demonstration. And a year later, NFB National took it up. And that began what was known as NAC tracking. Some of you were there. We would go around the country. Wherever NAC met, the Federation would go picketing because the standards weren't fair. The standards had nothing to do with the real issues of services and rights and needs of blind people, and because blind people were not involved in setting those standards. Well, think of where we have come. In the 40 years since that time, now we have an organization from within the National Federation of the Blind, including Louisiana Tech and other organizations, that certify professionals and certify agencies in terms of how well they meet the needs of blind people, using standards of dignity and respect and quality service that we basically formulate in terms of who gets our certifications. That's a big difference. We couldn't have done that 40 years ago. We are doing that now. Similarly, in 1973, 1972, there were white cane laws in some states in the country, but they didn't cover everything. There was no federal civil rights statute that included people with disabilities, people who were blind. And so we worked in New York State to get one of the first very strong laws. The late Paul Kaye introduced us to a legislator who helped us through the state legislature, and we got an amendment to the New York State human rights law that I think actually closed a lot of loopholes. And was one of the strongest laws in outlawing discrimination in employment, in housing, in public accommodations for blind people and people with other disabilities. And the Federation had a great deal to do with getting that done. And that predated regulations for federal civil rights law by a lot. Now, I've said that there is the kind of partnership that we talked about, the fact that we are able to work in such harmony with the major service providing agency in New York State. There. Federation grew. We got there as the Federation got more national staff. We got there as states worked more and more closely with the national organization, and as national has been able to work with us and help us in our states. We got there because the long, slow work of more people with our philosophy through O&M kinds of programs, influencing as we do in New York State, so that several members of our organization are on the executive. Even though more blind students are in college, and even though there is maybe a 70% unemployment rate of various sorts, think of the problems that we still face. We still face parents losing custody of their children. We still face get Braille when they need it. We still face people being told, don't use your cane in this school. I've still heard of people being told, don't use your cane in this agency. So that some of the battles that we thought we had fought and we hoped we had won, we're still fighting. We're fighting them differently. I'd say we're not fighting them, you know, there was a line that Dr. Jernigan said, we want no strife or confrontation, but we will do what we have to do. Okay? But we want no strife or confrontation. And all those lines about how we get more honey with bees with honey than with vinegar, all those lines about trying to work together, notions of, if not compromise, trying to see what the other person's problems are important. And we have been working much more within the system as well as fighting from outside than we were ever able to do 40 years ago. We didn't have seats at the table at all. We didn't have a seat at NAC. We didn't have a seat at programs thinking about our problems. Now we do. Some of them we control, and some of them, even if we don't control them, we have a lot to do with saying, to the people who do control them, what we want. This is an enormous difference. It is something that we can be proud of, and it's something that we really have to keep working for all the time. We have amazing opportunities through the kinds of things, Youth Slam, Junior Science Academy. Think about the Parents of Blind Children Division, and its magazine, Future Reflections. Think about the Diabetes Action Network. I mean, one of the amazing things about the Federation nationally and in this state, the Student Division, the Educators Division, computer science and engineering. There's a great growth of divisions of work, blind lawyers. I don't even need to mention them all. You know about them. So a lot of you are leaders in them. The point is that we have divisions to work with our particular problems, as it were, but we also keep our commonality as blind people, so that even if We're most interested in vendor issues or student issues or educator issues. We know, whether we're parents or not, that when blind people who are parents are discriminated against, we're all not students. We know that when someone has to spend 6 weeks or 6 months fighting to take the GRE test, it's a great thing to have to fight to take a GRE test. When one person has to do that, we're all victimized. People in New York State, or 50 years in New York State, fought for the privilege of serving on juries, and many of us have had that. A few years ago, I went to answer somewhat convenienced, as it were. I had to give up my days of work and this and that. And I was actually not able to serve on a jury that particular time. Why? Because I've been a victim of a crime. If you'd been a victim, you weren't going to be allowed to serve. Days of New York City, they're gone. I just had to leave. And it was a curious feeling, something that really had nothing to do. That's the kind of thing, but we want, but we want to be able to face, enjoy jury service or hate jury service or be inconvenienced by jury service as our neighbors are, not because we're blind. That's the kind of thing we're fighting for, and that's the kind of thing the Federation has been fighting for. And I would say that we will attain the future. We will feel that we've accomplished our goals when we can say that. When we don't lose custody of our children if we're blind, when we watch our children get the services they need as other children do, who would be denied print? A sighted child is not denied print. Braille should be as easily available to us as print is to our seatmates. That's the kind of thing we want. That's what we're fighting for. That's what we'll know we've attained the future. And that's what we have to strive for. I would say that we're getting much closer to it from the standpoint of resources, from the standpoint of partnerships, but we have public attitudes that were difficult 50 years ago and that are in some ways difficult still. But the work that we will do, we did it with Colonel Books. We've done it with slow, friendly, not so friendly progress. We have to keep doing it. And I feel honored to try to represent some of those past times, and I hope I'm still young enough to be part of that future. Thank you.